Okay, good evening. This is Zakia Hamida, Secretary of the Lost Found Nation of Islam in Houston. And we're on a call today. The title is Black Social Service and Other Black Professionals, How to Change the Condition of Black People Almost Overnight. Again, my name is Zakia Hamida, and I've been a member of the Lost Found Nation of Islam since 1989, and have been a student of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his teachings, peace be upon him. And now am a student of the teachings of the Most Honorable Silas Muhammad. We're on this call today in an effort to address ongoing problems in the Black community in the Americas. In a recent St. Louis American newspaper article, it was stated that the U.S. Census indicated that 1 in 4 Black people, or 9.9 million people, live in poverty in 2009 in the United States. And it also went on to say that children who grow up poor become adults who impose a burden on society in having low achievement in the areas of education, earnings, employment, health, and are more likely to be incarcerated. And to address this topic today, we have our esteemed guest, Minister Kareem El-Ghani. Minister Kareem El-Ghani, if you would,
yes,
please introduce yourself and say a little bit about yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum. My name is Kareem El-Ghani. I'm minister here in Houston, Texas, for Mosque 44, the Lost Found Nation of Islam, under the directions of the Honorable Silas Muhammad, and we do teach the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him, as was taught to him by Almighty Allah, Master Farad Muhammad, praises be to him forever. I have been a registered believer for almost 30 years, since 1981, and have served in the capacity of believer as minister of the mosque and as assistant minister of the mosque and in several other capacities. And I'm presently the minister here in Houston, Texas.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and ask you a couple of questions just to give our audience an understanding of the topic. If you could start out by telling us a little bit about, since our audience is Black social service workers and other Black professionals, can you tell us about, you know, just pretty much just giving us an overview of, you know, the view of Black social service workers and professionals as it relates to this topic, and tell us a little bit of why they should care about this topic.
Thank you, Secretary Hamida. On the topic of Black social workers and other professionals, I think we are appropriately addressing the right people here, Black social service workers. I would assume that Black social service workers are involved in the affairs and the lives of Black people, especially Black people who have a myriad of problems, and these problems have been addressed and are familiar to Black social service workers. They are trained in the problems of black people, and they are experienced in the problems of black people. For instance, sociologists. Sociologists are trained in the knowledge of the problems that we have. They know where we are. They know our condition, and they know how we got in that condition. And they would be familiar with just about all aspects of the life of black people, because that's whom they have studied and that's who they are familiar with. Psychologists and psychiatrists.
Okay.
Another branch of black social service workers.
Okay.
They are familiar with the mental condition of our people. They are familiar with our downward spiral into the myriad of psychological conditions that we suffer from. And because they have studied us and are familiar with us and are a part of us, they would know the difference between the kinds of problems that black people suffer and the kinds of people, kinds of problems that white people and other groups suffer, because oftentimes we get into our difficulties through different avenues. By different avenues, I mean, like you said before, black people, we are more prone or likely to be incarcerated. As we read in the newspaper now, we're more likely to be incarcerated and to serve jail and prison terms for crimes that we may have committed and crimes we may not have committed. So our circumstances are prone to be a little bit different from other people's circumstances. The black professionals who serve us would be aware of those circumstances, that are unique to us as a people. Let me give you an opportunity to ask the question a different way, or see if I'm presenting the type of answer that you are looking for. Thank you.
Okay. That was a good beginning. I guess to ask the question in a different way, the second part of the question, which is, why should black social service workers and other black professionals care about this topic, which is how to change the condition of black people almost overnight? Everyone is looking to, positive and progressive. Black people are looking to improve their condition individually. And so I guess the topic, what aspects of the program that's offered through the Lost Foundation of Islam and specifically through the Houston Mosque, what are some aspects that people would be interested to hear about regarding this topic?
Once again, thank you and for restating the question in a very provocative and and in such a way that it demands a 2010 updated answer.
Mm-hmm.
By a 2010 updated answer, I would begin by saying, how can these black professionals assist us in changing our condition overnight? First, our black social workers and professionals, their training, their education does not speak to changing our condition overnight. It speaks to our condition the way society speaks to our condition. A gradual changing, a pull yourself up by your bootstraps if you at all can, a long drawn out process, if you will, of changing your condition. And I would add over the long haul and not overnight. The Lost Found Nation of Islam, as taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and as taught now by the Honorable Silas Muhammad, speaks to changing our condition overnight with the aid of black professional and social workers by addressing our unity. Our unity, meaning we, of understanding our condition, understanding how we got into this condition, and addressing this condition from the point of a people who want independence, a people who want separation from the nation and people who for 400 years worked to put us in this condition and to keep us in this condition. So once again, the training of the black professionals and black social workers addresses our difficulty from the position and perspective of the people and the nation that put us in this condition and strive to keep us in this condition. Wherein the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him, addressed our condition and our circumstances from a position of a people who must be independent, who must have a land that they can call their own, who must establish and go back to their own. Let me pause now to see if I have run over track or off track or have some way maybe stepped outside of the boundaries of the question that you asked. Let me pause here.
I think that was an excellent response. And I will just go ahead on to the next question that I had, which was, as I stated earlier in the beginning of the call, you know, talking a little bit about an article that appeared in the St. Louis American newspaper, where it kind of talked about the problems of black people, although it is not, it's a problem of a lot of black people. In the article, it talks about 9.9 million that lived in poverty last year. Pretty much if you follow anyone who follows what happens with black people today and who knows about the history of black people in America, know that poverty has been an ongoing problem with our people. And this is even 100 plus years after slavery. It's an ongoing problem, and even now, it's an extreme problem during this so-called recession. So in the article, it talks a little bit about the educational gaps, earnings and employment, health. But along those quality of life categories, what can you tell us more about the problems of black people that, you know, maybe the person who's new to this topic may not be aware of. That, and it's kind of some of the categories that are talked about in the Quality of Life report that was written by All for Reparations and Emancipation, the non-governmental organization that published a very informative report on the quality of life of descendants of slaves in the Americas. But what can you tell us a little bit more about the problems of black people for people who are new to this topic?
Once again, thank you. Thank you for stating the question so eloquently and broadly. In addressing quality of life issues among black people, I don't think I could add anything to it because maybe a little explanation, but our problems are so broadly known and so widely broadcast that it's kind of maybe a little difficult to begin. Let's begin with employment. Traditionally, our unemployment rates have always been much higher than the unemployment rates of whites. And this would directly affect our quality of life. And we have in this country, a built-in system of deprivation for black people. No matter how good times are economically in this country, black people have always fared worse from the advent of slavery right on down to this year, 2010. So the problem not only is systemic, but it is a planned and deliberate program to keep black people in want and in need and in subjugation. The plan and the works of black social workers appears to be only a band-aid approach to the problems and does not give a permanent solution. The band-aid approach I'm talking about is finding a few more high-paying jobs for a few more black people, while the system that creates unemployment and underemployment for black people remains in place. And in many instances, the only jobs created by these programs to bring up black people out of poverty are the jobs that are held by the people who advocate such things as the black social worker. Those jobs are intended and do, in fact, black social workers out of the condition of poverty, while they very seldom address the true issue of unemployment and poverty for people other than those black social workers who advocate those things. Did you say
9.9 million in 2009?
In 2009, 9.9 million black people, near a quarter of the population, the total population of black people as numbered by the census. Realistically, I asked the question, and knowing the answer already, do these black social workers address the problem with a solution in mind, or do they merely address the problem because it is the job of their professional instinct training to address the problem in a professional way, and all they do is really say what the problem is,
mm-hmm.
and rather than being able to address it systemically, changing the system that puts black people in poverty and changing the system that keeps black people in poverty. And basically what they do is measure, codify, and classify black people in poverty, and that's where they remain. So it's only addressed in a measure of looking at the problem or measuring the problem without the solution. And once again, hopefully I have come close to answering what you asked. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay. If you could, maybe just repeat that, the beginning of your reply when you were talking about social service workers being in a position where, how you were explaining how they are part of the, how they are, they fit into the problem, or they fit into this whole issue of the conditions of black people.
I think I was addressing it from position that the social workers, black or white, any other color, are really a part of the system that
mm-hmm.
put black people in poverty and keep black people in poverty. Their position and the limits of what they can do is to merely measure the number of people who are in poverty, and they measure them at 9.4 and 9.5 million.
Okay.
And attach a percentage to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now the black social workers have none. They do not control any of the means of production. They don't control the, have any say so over the manufacturing outlets that are shipped overseas. None of the mining corporations that are overseas. And rather than the companies keeping the jobs here, close to the black community where our people, we can get to those jobs, they are instead shipped overseas to people who will work for maybe a tenth of what people in this country will work for. And that economic model only serves to weaken the black community and ultimately weaken the entire country, because the circular flow of money doesn't come back into the country except through the hands, through the mega profits of those companies and presidents and CEOs who control those means of production.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, my next question then is, based on some of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him, and which is also furthered by the Most Honorable Silas Muhammad today, what are some of the prescribed solutions that black social service workers and other black professionals, what should they know if they are interested in helping or, you know, dedicating work to solving some of the problems within the black community?
I would suggest strongly that those black social workers take a look at the result of the work they have done and if they see a result that produces strength and upliftment within the black community and people that they're serving, I would say kudos to them. Keep up the good work. But if they look at the result of that work and they see a black community that in spite of all their hard work and effort, the result is that the black community does not progress, it does not prosper, and in fact gets weaker and weaker, and the numbers of incarcerated black men and black women begins to accelerate, the poverty level begins to accelerate, the disease and affliction within the black community still accelerates, I would invite them to take a look at a program, particularly the program that was offered by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said to us that integration would be our downfall if we pursued it. He asked this country for two or three states. And he did not ask for states like California and big states like Montana and Texas. He asked for two small states, enough to take care of the population at that time, which was estimated to be 22 million. And he asked for two small states, and that we would get to ourselves in those small states and invite all the rest of the black people in this country to join us and to grow our own food and to manufacture and produce our own needs, our own food, clothes, and shelter. And we would not be a dependent people upon the slave master children in this country. I would venture to say that the total cost of placing us in two states to our own would be less than the cost of the social services and welfare services provided to black people at this present day. But there's something systemic about the problem that defies a solution. And the problem is not necessarily racism. It goes much deeper than mere not liking or hating black people. It's a system of economic dependence. We have had white people on welfare for 400 years. We started off giving them 400 years of free labor, which was a welfare system to them, 100% welfare. Well, now they reverse it and give black people a few crumbs from the table of the present-day rulers or pharaohs of this land, and they call it welfare to us. We would want to change that. We would want to get them off of the welfare that we have given them and ask them for payment for that which they took from us in slavery. Well, I think it's a mathematically good bargain that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad asked for. He asked for them to give us two states and to take care of us for 20 years in those states as repayment for us taking care of them for 400 years in the entire country that they took from the Indians and the other originals who were here. And it seems like a good bargain to me, because we are only asking for 5% of the time that we gave to them. We're asking for 20 years of support wherein they took from us more than 400 years. And the entire process is worked out through a reparations paper issued by the Honorable Silas Muhammad. And this is only just a few outtakes from the entire reparations that we're asking for. So we're asking for about 5% of what we have already given to this country. Thank you once again, and I hope I have begun to answer the question that you asked.
Yes, sir, you have. Okay. I guess in conclusion, if you could, please tell our audience about what is the takeaway message that you would like to leave with the audience as far as what they can do next, or what resources that may be available for those of our audience who consider themselves, you know, champions of improving our community and who want to learn more about what they can do after this call.
Once again, thank you. What I would admonish us all to do right now is to take a look at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's program at the back of the Muhammad Speaks. This program is probably 80 years old, and it has been for 80 years begging for our attention throughout all the integration years and segregation years and marching and boycott years. That program has stood the test of time, and it has not been taken in any serious kind of way except by the Muslims. But today we are being forced now to take a look at, not only to take a look at, but to embrace that program of getting to ourselves, getting a land that we can call our own, pooling our resources, and learning to live in peace. Asking, yea, demanding now through a program of reparations that we be repaid for that which was taken from us for a period of more than 400 years. Get you a copy of the oldest Muhammad Speaks you can find, or the newest Muhammad Speaks you can find, and go to the very back page and read those statements of what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe. It has not changed for 80 years. That is the true solution that will break this systemic impasse that has had us in physical slavery for 400 years and a mental, moral, and spiritual slavery for that same length of time. It is the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Be upon him. Yes, sir. Thank you.
All righty. well. Thank you so much for your time, Minister Al-Ghani. And I hope that the audience found this talk informative and useful.
Yes, ma'am. And thank you very much for having me on.